This is the continuation of Unit 10, on the future of computing in Component 4, an introduction to information and computer science. This topic discusses cloud computing, a popular buzzword of today. Cloud computing is often thought of using computers and services out there somewhere on the Internet, without being well defined. Fortunately, the National Institute of Standards and Technology has a working definition to help clarify the concept and identify the requirements for cloud computing. Once we realize that we may not all agree on the definition, let's look at the National Institute definition. It states, cloud computing is a model for enabling convenient, on-demand network access to a shared pool of configurable computing resources, for example, networks, servers, storage, applications, and services, that can be rapidly provisioned and released with minimal management effort or service provider interaction. This cloud model promotes availability and is composed of five essential characteristics, three service models, and four deployment models. Once we have a definition to work with, we can start to look at the parts of the definition to help us understand what cloud computing is. Before we go into the details of cloud computing, we need to realize that the pieces of cloud computing, like so many pieces of computer science, build on previous technology. The idea of using a shared pool of resources is not a new concept. Significant previous work was done on distributed computing to share the processing workload between connected computer systems. One well-known example was used in SETI, the search for extraterrestrial intelligence. In 1995, David Getty proposed a virtual supercomputer to examine radio telescope data for signs of intelligent life elsewhere in the universe, using large numbers of internet-connected computers. The computers would receive the radio telescope data, look for narrow bandwidth signals, which do not occur in nature, and return the results to a managing system. SETI at home was launched for this purpose in 1999, and there are now over 2.5 million host systems in 234 countries that have helped to examine the radio telescope data. Now that we've seen a little of what we can do with shared resources, let's look into the details of what cloud computing is, starting with the five characteristics. The first is on-demand self-service. This means that a user can provision the systems to match their requirements, such as system storage, without requiring human interaction with the service provider. Another is broad network access. The system is easily available over a network from a variety of platforms, possibly including mobile devices and portable computers. We also have resource pooling, similar to what we saw with SETI. Here, the resources are available to multiple consumers, with the resources dynamically assigned based on demand. Rapid elasticity is also a requirement, meaning that the capabilities can easily be increased or decreased to meet demand. To the user, the capabilities may be viewed as infinite. Finally, it must be a measured service. A cloud system measures, monitors, and reports on services such as storage, processing, and bandwidth. Cloud computing has three service models. The first, software as a service, is perhaps the best known. It simply means that the application is running on a system or systems. Remember the rapid elasticity characteristic, remote from the user, and may be accessed by an application such as a web browser. Another model is the cloud platform as a service. Here the user has the option to deploy applications into the cloud rather than using applications that have been previously deployed. Finally, there's the cloud infrastructure as a service. In this case, we're down to management of resources such as processing, storage, and networks, rather than the applications themselves. The deployment model lets us know who owns the physical resources used to host the cloud. A private cloud means that the cloud is operated for a single organization. It may be managed by the organization, or a third party may manage it for the organization. A community cloud is shared by several organizations that may have interests in common, such as several hospitals in a region. There are also public clouds, made available to those who require services for a fee. There are a number of commercial organizations which offer these services today. Finally, there's the hybrid cloud, which combines multiple clouds. So how is a cloud possible? What makes it possible for resources to be elastic and appear to be infinite? One technology is virtualization, which permits multiple systems to appear to be running on a single hardware system. As with most items that we've seen, this builds on existing technology. Virtualization is not a new concept. One example that was available in 1972 is IBM's Virtual Machine Facility 370. From the user's point of view, they had a system that was dedicated to their use. When we combine virtualization with distributed computing, which permits multiple systems to appear to be a single resource, we have the requisite components for elasticity. So how does a virtual system work? In today's virtual system environment, there's no requirement for each virtual system to match the operating system or hardware of the physical system. For this to work, we need a hypervisor. It's the responsibility of the hypervisor to take the request from the virtual systems to execute an instruction or access a virtual resource and translate it to execute an instruction or access a resource using the physical hardware of the host system. There are a number of hypervisors available today, both through commercial and open source channels. You can even install on your personal computer and run multiple virtual systems and manage networks connecting the virtual systems. While cloud computing has potential advantages, it also has its own set of issues that need to be considered. One issue is access. What happens when the network is down? What happens to access to the service if your provider is undergoing a denial of service attack? If you depend on an application that's software as a service running somewhere in the cloud, there will be times that it may not be accessible. If the network is congested, performance may be unacceptable, even though the service is still reachable. Another issue is security. If your deployment model is not a private cloud, the data exists on a physical system outside of your control. Think of medical records control. How do you guarantee that they are available as needed and are kept secure? Cloud computing has potential in the right circumstances, but the risks also need to be considered. Computers have changed our society significantly over the last few decades. Think of how you connect with your coworkers, friends, and family. How much of that takes advantage of the technology that's available today? We will look just a little bit at some of the changes that electronic mail, instant messaging, voice over IP, video capabilities, SMS, social networks, and location-based services have made, as well as personal health records and privacy implications. Electronic mail has become a fact of life. The Internet standard that defines the protocol used to send and receive email dates from 1982, and most people in the United States have at least one email address. Initially, email was limited to 7-bit ASCII text, but has since been extended to support the ability to send multimedia, such as images. Think of how email has changed the way you communicate. Do you call someone or walk down the hall? How often do you send an email, even though the person is right next to you, just to ensure that you have a record of your message? Or have you moved beyond email to a newer form of communication, one of the others we'll look at in just a bit? Note, of course, that email has limitations as well. It's quite easy to send an email pretending to be another person or to spoof a sender. We now have a massive industry built around unsolicited bulk email, commonly known as spam, both in the generation of and attempts to stop spam. Most spam you'll never see. It's often rejected by internet service providers and mail servers, but it's estimated that 90% of all email messages are spam. Email is asynchronous communication. You can send a message, but you never know when or even if the recipient will receive and read it. While its asynchronous nature can be an advantage, you can read and write email independently of whether the person you want to communicate with is even online. It can be less personal because of that. Instant messaging, however, is synchronous. You can send messages and receive an almost instantaneous reply, assuming, of course, that the recipient is online. Like almost everything else we've seen, instant messaging is not a new concept. Messages could be sent to the computer operator from a terminal, asking the operator to, for example, mount a specific tape for access. The next step was to communicate between users on the same system. In the late 1970s, Unix had a talk command that allowed exactly this, simple text messages that could be sent and received between users. We can add the ability to communicate with users on different systems with protocols such as Internet Relay Chat, standardized in 1993. In 1996, ICQ was released, arguably the first instant messaging service. By today, we have quite a variety of instant messaging providers and protocols, providing flexibility to users and allowing communication with our friends, family, and coworkers. Note, however, that there are also negative considerations. The use of instant messaging can be disruptive to productivity. Have you ever been distracted from a current task because you've received a message? It's actually enough of a problem that there is research into the issue. With the Internet, we've added yet another method of communication. Instead of just text, we could also use the Internet to communicate using voice. And once we have inexpensive video cameras and higher bandwidth, we can also send video data. Internet phones are available commercially to use in place of traditional POTS or plain old telephone service. Soft phones are available to use VoIP on computer systems and a number of services such as Google Talk and Skype for communication between service members or to external phone numbers. As both microphones and video cameras are integrated into traditional computer systems, what follows next? Some elements of these services are already available on mobile devices. Will we see the demise of the phone network to be replaced by the Internet data network? Will the next generation of mobile devices have integrated video and instantaneous communications between users with full voice and video capabilities? Short message service, or SMS, is best known as text messaging. It's limited to 140 characters, but is convenient to send short messages between users of mobile devices. There is a shorthand language that is often used to communicate, but the language did not originate with SMS. Again, we see the extension of existing work, in this case, the language used in instant messages, and before that, in messages on chat systems. LOL, laughing out loud, has been with us for many years. There's even the speculation that Abraham Lincoln invented the emoticon for the smiley face, discovered after examining a transcript of a speech from 1862. Social networking is now a research field of its own. We've seen huge growth in communications between individuals using these sites, for both personal and professional reasons, and many corporations are now establishing a presence on social networking sites. Social networking over the Internet has now been with us for well over a decade, starting with Six Degrees in 1997. Among others, we had Friendster in 2002, LinkedIn and MySpace in 2003, and Facebook and Twitter in 2006. Some sites are personal, some directed towards professional contact, such as LinkedIn, and some, like Facebook, may combine the two. Most social networking sites depend on the interaction between the users. Twitter is a different concept, with messages sent directly to a potentially large number of users, rather than relying on the interaction between the users. We see that current social networking sites start to combine most of the previous forms of communication. Email can be replaced with messages between users, and instant messaging can be built into chat features. Voice and video chat isn't apparent yet, but we can expect that this will be a feature to be added. After all, why would a commercial service want you to go to a competitor for a feature they can provide? We finally have a new trend, location-based services. With the availability of global positioning satellite receivers on many mobile devices, it's possible to easily determine your physical location. Given that, there are applications that can identify local services based on your position, such as a nearby coffee shop or store. It is now also possible to let individuals know your location, giving us location-based social networking. This is still a relatively new idea that has the potential for both positive and negative impacts. While it may simplify identifying the location of a meeting by tracking the location of the meeting chairman, what are the aspects on the privacy of the individuals involved? Is it something you use or would use? With the advent of increased technology, we now have the option to store our medical records using a personal health record, or PHR. The information may be stored on our own computer systems, a personal storage device such as a USB key, or on the internet using the software as a service model. A list of PHR vendors is provided by myphr.com, sponsored by the American Health Information Management Association Foundation. There are also two major commercial entities that now provide this service: Google through Google Health and Microsoft through Health Vault. While it may be convenient to keep our medical information in a PHR, we also need to consider the practicality. If we provide information from a PHR, will it be accepted by the clinician? How can the information be integrated into the clinician's electronic health record, or EHR? Privacy is an increasing concern as we now have an internet presence from our use of email, social networks, blogs, and Twitter messages, which are now archived and indexed by Google. We need to remember that this information is visible to many, including friends, family, peers, and supervisors. This information may now be archived and available for many years to come, and can affect your reputation and hiring prospects in the future. We need to consider the internet as forever. We also need to consider the privacy of our health information. There is now a federal requirement that all security breaches affecting over 500 individuals be available publicly. There is now a long list for 2010 available from the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services. Our final topic for this unit is ubiquitous computing. We've seen some of the changes to computing over the past decades and how they have changed and how they've changed us. Let us look at just a few items to show that they're with us everywhere. We are no longer tied to using a computer at a fixed location. The computer can come with us. We looked at laptops available since the 1990s and netbooks, which access internet resources in the 2000s. Even smaller and easier to keep with us were the personal digital assistants. While not a general-purpose computing device, we could keep the PDA with us at all times. The mobile device is much more of a general-purpose device. The next time you're in a public space, look around. How many people do you see using their mobile device? With over 4.6 billion mobile phones and devices, and more phones than people in the industrialized world, there's a good chance you'll see quite a few in use. Beyond mobile computing, we now have computers and devices connected to one another wirelessly. We now have our own personal area networks, or PAN, that travel with us. We have our Bluetooth headsets, mice, and keyboards, to name just a few. We're even extending our personal mobile networks into our personal mobile transportation, with Bluetooth connections inside our automobiles, from our mobile devices with Bluetooth capability. We're even seeing the combination of our personal networks with our social networks. A major automobile manufacturer announced in September 2010 that it's providing the capability to update social network status using your mobile device in your automobile. We also see changes when providing healthcare because of the ubiquity of computing. In some rural areas and developing countries, there may be no access available to healthcare facilities. However, remember what we have today: telephone connections, network connectivity, and video cameras available or integrated into home computer systems. With this technology and the future changes in technology that will give us greater network bandwidth and improvements in integrated multimedia devices, we'll be increasingly able to bring the clinician virtually to the patient. New developments in technology are also being studied to monitor the health of the elderly. These techniques include the placement of unobtrusive sensors and remote analysis of the data to identify changes in mobility and cognitive function. If an issue is identified, it becomes possible to intervene before a problem arises. We've seen that computers are getting smaller with significant increases in system performance. We're slowly adding more options for system control, including touchscreens and voice commands. We're also moving from the requirement for both the applications and the data to reside on the local system, instead allowing both to reside somewhere in the network cloud. All of these changes have led to changes in our society and our behavior as computer systems become more tightly built into our daily lives. What happens next? Will we wear our computers? Will a keyboard be viewed as an anachronism in the near future? Will we see voice commands? Will we be able to control our computers by gesturing at them or even just looking at the screens? Yes, there's research into that as well. What additional changes will we see in our society? What about healthcare? With improvements in telemedicine, will a regular visit be done from home? We've seen the changes of the past. We now need to imagine the possibilities of the future.